several miles off the main highway, tucked away in a secluded canyon on prime vineyard property, stands a rustic barn that was built many decades before the vines around it were planted. In that barn, a sophisticated broadcast and recording studio has been built. The barn also has a well-hidden root cellar stocked with many of the world's most exceptional wines, only to be shared with guests who secretly come to offer their insights and tell their stories. Guests are sworn to secrecy and are shuttled to the studio aboard a John Deere tractor. Those who cannot make the journey in person are interviewed by satellite hookup, and sometimes the crew simply sneaks away with microphones in hand and interviews guests in barrel rooms, wine cellars, and other magical places. All of this is done like clockwork every single week, so that we can bring you another episode of Grape Encounters Radio.
Crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz.
Yes, sirree, it is time for your weekly Grape Encounter with David Wilson, brought to you by EpicStyle.com. If you want to live the wine lifestyle, then you want to visit EpicStyle.com. I have to begin today's show by asking you a personal question. So just how much did you pay for your last bottle of wine? Was it $20, $30, $40? Or are you a two-buck bargain Bordeaux kind of a person? Listen, if you were in Los Olivos, California last weekend, there's a pretty good chance you paid as much as a few $1,000 for a single bottle of wine. That is if you were at the remarkable Cellar Classic Rare Wine Sale and Auction that we've been telling you about for months. In just a minute, I'm going to have one of the event's organizers and a good friend of Grape Encounters Radio, Stephen Pepe, on the line. Steve's going to give us a complete rundown of who bought what and for how much. Actually, he probably won't tell. It's simply amazing. And since the auction took place at an Episcopal church, I got to thinking a lot this past week about the subject of the role of wine in places of worship. And I decided that this was a topic we really needed to spend a little time with, and we're going to do that later on in the show. This is fascinating stuff for sure. On today's show, we're also going to have Matt Dubow, the king of cool products and our gadget guru. He's going to help us answer the question, are you living the wine lifestyle or are you sipping on the sidelines? So uncork that bottle and let's pour ourselves into this week's installment of Grape Encounters Radio. Now, while we're getting Stephen Pepe on the line, I want to introduce you to a man that keeps a mighty good company every day. His name is Jack Dixon, and Jack is the general manager of the Wine Vault of the Desert, a company that stores and protects your liquid assets with great care. I've asked Jack to join us in our conversation with Stephen Pepe and help give us some insight into wine collectors and people who pay big money for highly coveted wines. Jack, thanks for joining us today.
I'm glad to be here.
Now, I don't want to waste any more time. I know you know Stephen Pepe, at least by reputation, right?
Definitely. We store some of his wine for some of our clients.
Oh, yeah. See, this isn't wine you just keep in the cupboard. Hey, Stephen, you on the line?
Yes, sir. I'm here, David.
Hey, you heard what Jack said. They store your wine. That's got to be a big compliment in and of itself.
Sure is.
Now, Stephen was a big-time lawyer with O'Melveny & Myers, right?
Correct.
Big firm. And then you threw in the towel when you started to make wine for yourself in Long Beach. You got good at it, I guess, and moved on up to the Central Coast, started Clopepe, and deeply involved in that community there, and that's where the rare wine auction comes into play, right?
Yes, it does.
St. Mark's is really a centerpiece there in Los Olivos. They do a lot for the community, and that's what this fundraiser was all about. I'm totally fascinated with the fundraiser. You guys started it last year, I think raised over $100,000. This year, what'd you do?
This year, the total is going to be somewhere around $129,000.
Holy smoke. So what was the top grossing sale there, and was it did they buy it in silent auction or was it a live auction?
It was in the live auction. It was actually an 18 liter bottle of Syrah that of 2009 San Ynez Syrah that was put together by Brooks Firestone from a dozen of the leading Syrah producers, and it's a one of a kind bottle that had a lot of appeal.
Are you serious? So the top-grossing wine was actually something that the legendary Brooks Firestone blended. He'd do that in his kitchen?
I don't think so. I think he did it at his Curtis Winery.
You know, I'm thinking maybe that next year I could do that. I could pick out some good wines and blend them and bring them down there. Could I take a percentage?
I don't think so.
I'm going to turn to Jack for a second. Jack, in your operation, what's the most valuable thing that you've got over there?
The most valuable wine bottle that we have currently is a Haute Brion French wine. It's a 1.5-liter bottle, and the current value right now, it's a 1955, which is one of the three best years of French wine in the last 100 years. And the current value of that wine is $11,900 for a single bottle.
Would you be willing to donate that next year to the auction there in Los Olivos?
I don't own that wine. I would have to check with our client on that one.
It's amazing when you think about the fact that one bottle is $11,000 and most people will not spend that much on wine in a year, maybe let alone in their lifetime.
Yeah, that's true. But I would say our average bottle of wine stored in our facility is probably maybe $70 plus or minus.
So question to both of you, the kind of person that buys this type of wine, are they collectors or are they actually consumers?
I think you get both. I tend to buy wines at auction, and I also tend to drink them, but there are people who want to fill out their collection or want to get a special wine. We had a 61 Aubrion and two 1959 Moutons, so we had some really unusual wines, including 47 Cheval Blanc, which is one of the greatest wines of the last century, as well as a 47 Petrus, and there are a handful of those wines left in the world, and some folks want to get them to fill out the collection, and others of us drink them.
Yeah, now you are a drinker of these wines. Are you ever fearful that when you open that bottle that there's going to be salad dressing in there instead?
Unfortunately, it happens, and that's one of the risks of the game.
Now, another one of the risks of the game is that you don't live long enough to be able to enjoy your collection. So I'm going to take a momentary break, and I want to bring in Paul Crosswhite, who has prepared a very interesting story about some new health benefits associated with drinking wine. We've all heard that wine is great for your heart and other things, but Paul's discovered some very interesting stuff. I want Paul to share that with us now, and then when we come back, we're going to have more with Stephen Pepe and Jack Dixon talking about rare wine and rare wine collection.
Got milk? That's a highly recognized ad line, of course. Perhaps the World of Wines version would be, got skin? The answer would be a resounding yes. The latest news headline reads, drinking wine protects you from sunburn. A little deeper into the story, we learn that drinking wine or eating grapes may also protect us from skin cancer. Now we're talking. The single biggest cause of the current melanoma epidemic is our addiction to sun exposure. If grapes and wine help prevent these problems, that is a lifestyle choice worth considering. Grape juice works quite well. Wine, by many accounts, works even better. The body-saving chemicals, which are tannins and flavonoids, are found throughout the grape, but the best benefits are derived from the skin of the grape. That's because the healthy properties of grape skin become concentrated by the very process of making red wine. Red wine is red because the liquid stock is allowed to linger and mix with the skins of the grapes. The chemicals released as part of this process lend the deep color, flavor, and tanginess to red wines. These compounds are already known to be heart-friendly, thanks to folks in France who proved that a diet rich in cholesterol needn't be terminal as long as you wash it down with a little Cabernet. News that these same compounds fight sunburn and skin cancer comes from scientists in Barcelona, Spain. They looked at what happens when human skin is met by damaging ultraviolet rays from the sun and discovered that consuming grapes and wines literally stops the UV reaction in its tracks. Also called polyphenols, these compounds have long been thought to have extensive antioxidant properties, meaning they may block premature aging and lead to longer lifespans by stopping bad molecules called free radicals. These Barcelona biochemists say the next goal is to use the grape model to develop a new generation of protective skin creams and salves. Marta Cascante, a leading scientist in this study, says in her words, "The study supports the idea of using these products to protect the skin from cell damage and death caused by solar radiation, as well as increasing our understanding." Already, it's reported that top cosmetic companies are directing their R&D departments to concoct sun creams and pills that copy this natural process. So, not too long from now, we'll be able to go to the pharmacy or market and get what amounts to a bottle of wine in a tube or caplet that will prevent our epidermis from suffering solar ruin. Meantime, the quickest way to see such benefits is to stay in the shade, use a good sunscreen, and break out some vino. Now, of course, the story has touched off a national debate among news anchors and bloggers, a number of whom are skeptical. Hopefully, the argument will be settled by time, as well as simply approaching the matter with moderation. The good news, though, is once again that wine, by so many reports, offers healthy benefits. Red wine in particular not only lowers the risk of heart disease, but helps block a couple of bad things that happen to skin. Now that's a trifecta. Uncorked, I'm Paul Crosswhite for Grape Encounters.
And we're going to continue our discussion of rare wine collection with Matt Dixon and Stephen Pepe. And of course, later on in the show, a fascinating discussion about communion wines on Grape Encounters Radio.
The glass is still half full, and there's a lot more in the bottle. It's Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson on GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
You know, my friends make fun of me because I've got a kitchen full of wine gadgets and gizmos. I have to admit, it's an amazing collection, and I'm fond of all of my gadgets. In fact, they can be very entertaining at dinner parties. But while most of them are fun and are purely for showmanship, a few of them are absolutely essential, and the most important of all is my Vinair wine aerator. You know, it's an absolute fact that wine tastes much better when you expose it to air, and no aerator, in my opinion, does a better job than the Vinair. You can get your Vinair by going over to GrapeEncounters.com. We've got an ad there for Vinair. Click on it, and it'll take you straight to the Vinair order desk. Look, you pay good money for your wine. Let your wine live up to its full potential. With the Vinair, again, go to GrapeEncounters.com and order yours today. It's a breath of fresh air for your wine.
Great products and services for the wine-loving community is something we love telling you about on Grape Encounters Radio. And at the top of our list is the Original Wine of the Month Club. They've been around since 1972 and offer many great discounts, cellar master reviews, amazing assortments, and gift baskets. And it's easy to set up a gift membership for a wine lover near and dear to you. Visit GrapeEncountersRadio.com and click on the link from the homepage. That's where you'll also find the special promo code and save 15%. Another fun product on the GrapeEncountersRadio.com site is the Wine Rack from Papa Bird. The Wine Rack is a sports bra that you can fill with your favorite wine, enjoy your favorite beverage, and enhance your figure, ladies. A special promo code is available from our homepage. Click through, use it, and save 10% just for being part of the Grape Encounters Radio family. Don't miss out on any of the other great deals available to you when you visit GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
You're not daydreaming. You're just having a grape encounter on GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
And we are back with more Grape Encounters Radio. I have two guests on today. Very excited to have both of them. First, Stephen Pepe of Clopepe Vineyards talking to us about an event that we have been touting for a number of months now, the Cellar Classic that took place last weekend in Los Olivos. Raised, what did you say, Stephen? $120,000?
Somewhere around $129,000.
You say somewhere around. You still counting?
Yes, we are. We're still figuring out. We've got expenses to deal with as well. And, no, that's the gross.
Oh, that's the gross.
It'll probably be about $122 to $125.
Also here, Jack Dixon, general manager of the Wine Vault of the Desert. Jack, there's a lot of rare wine in the Coachella Valley, is there not?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that live in this area that have a lot of experience and many years of collecting wine throughout the world. And a lot of times as they retire and move, they relocate their collection. And so there's quite a bit of interesting and expensive wines.
Now, Stephen, would that make you nervous, storing your wine in a place like the Palm Springs, Palm Desert area?
No, it wouldn't. When I lived in L.A., I stored my wine in place in Encino, as long as it's a well-run facility, it's actually an advantage because you can't just pop into your own wine cellar at Saturday night and pull something out. So it does encourage you not to use it up as you might as fast as you might if you had it in your own cellar.
That's a very good point. Now, let's talk about the people who were at the Cellar Classic. Largely, these people are collectors, right?
I would say a majority of them were. Not everybody there was a collector, but the majority of them were.
And do they generally have the right kind of facilities in their homes to be collectors of this caliber, or do more of them use facilities like Jack's facility?
There aren't a lot of Jack's facilities up in the area. Most of the people here have their own wine cellars.
Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about this group of collectors, because as I understand it, it is a very small community, is it not? And there's a lot of communication that goes on between wine collectors. There's a very finite amount of really great wine out there. How much communication goes on between the people who collect wine?
There's a fair amount of it, and also you have to remember you're in the middle of the wine country, so there are a lot of folks here who are in the wine business, and so you've got both ends of the spectrum being covered.
Now, how about you, Jack? Is there some sort of communication that you put out? Do the collectors who store wine at your facility offer up their parts of their collection from time to time to other people?
Well, I think the most impressive thing that we do, and the thing that gets the best resonance from our clients, is during the season, not in the summertime, but during the season when most of our clients are here, about every 7 weeks we will have a wine tasting where our clients are invited. They usually bring a guest, and we typically have 40 to 50 people in our facility at that time, and everybody brings two interesting wines, not something that you drink all the time, and we put signage out. We have one of our restaurant sponsors that helps us with small items to eat that matches with the wine, and everybody just mingles around, tries this, and there are a lot of times there's interesting wines that you may have heard of, but you haven't had the opportunity to try.
Let's go back to this subject of the fragility of wine for a second, because this just makes me so nervous. I've got a bottle of wine. I paid $7,000 for it. Is there some technology that can determine that? Anything that can give us a better idea as to whether or not we're making a purchase that we're not going to be disappointed in?
Sure. There are two things you'd want to know. You'd want to know the provenance of the wine, that is, who's had it and where has it been stored. And then the second thing you'd want to do is you'd want to actually look at the bottle. You'd want to look at what's called the eulage, the fill level, how much space there is between the cork and the wine. And if it's normally, it should be in the neck of the bottle, and if it's not, and if it's down in what they call the shoulder area, high shoulder, mid shoulder, low shoulder, that indicates that wine has, one way or another, escaped from there and probably been replaced with oxygen, which is not a good thing. And the other thing is to see whether or not there's any seepage coming out of the cork or under the capsule.
Jack, do people ask you about their wines? Do they come to you and say, hey, what do you think about this one?
Well, a lot of times when we get a collection, sometimes people will bring 20, 30, 40, 100 cases of wine for us to store for them. And as one of our processes of entering into our inventory, which they have access to, we do check the quality of the wine. And if there are some seepage and things of that nature, we will let the people know. Knock on wood, we have had very, very few problems with some of the wine. I think most of the people that have the wine have really paid special attention and have tried to store it properly at the right temperature, the right humidity on the side to maintain the cork being moist and that type of thing.
Steve, talk to me about the pedigree of these wines at the sale. Is there some sort of one sheet that you have available to potential buyers that talks about where this bottle of wine has been?
Yes, on each of the catalog entries, we put from whose cellar we had, and obviously the community is fairly small, so everybody more or less knows everybody else, and you know that it's coming out of Brooks Firestone's cellar, for example, or from his father's cellar when he was ambassador to Belgium, that the wine has been properly stored and taken care of.
I guess in the grand scheme of things, for a lot of these wines, they're not really ever going to get opened, the real expensive ones. I came across a story, I think the story broke in June, And it was about two bottles of the world's oldest champagne, Veuve Clicquot, that spent 170 years at the bottom of the ocean. Did you guys hear about this? And sold for 54,000 euros at an auction in Finland. Would have been nice to have one of those at the rare wine sale that you had there. But I guess they actually opened up some of that wine, and it was still good. Amazing, huh?
It is, yeah. If it's properly stored, and then the advantage of being in the ocean is that the temperature, once you get down below the surface, stays fairly constant.
Well, I'm thinking that this wine, this champagne, was actually very cold. It was sitting at the bottom of the ocean, 170 years. I mean, absolutely amazing. They must have used synthetic corks. That's what I'm thinking, because those corks held up pretty darn good, did they not?
I thought the story was that they were wax, and that's one of the reasons they lasted, because if you had used a capsule on it, unless it was a lead capsule, chances are it would have disintegrated over time.
We just have a couple minutes left talking to Stephen Pepe, good friend of Grape Encounters Radio, one of the organizers of the Cellar Classic, which is going to grow, I think, into a pretty big rare wine event. I expect you're going to continue to do this, right?
That's our intention.
Yeah, growing it. And did you have people come from further distances this year?
We did. We had some folks come down from Napa. We obviously had folks from Santa Barbara, but we also started attracting some more folks from the Los Angeles area who heard about last year's auction and were interested and decided to check it out.
Now, I'm going to be very curious as to whether or not some of these bottles find their way down to the wine vault that Jack operates with. Is this something, Jack, that you see often, that your collectors will have wines shipped directly to your facility after they've been to an event like this?
Yes. Our wines come in, and we do accept the deliveries on behalf of our clients, and everybody likes that. That way, they don't have to wait at home for a truck to show up and so on.
Who transports this stuff?
Usually, we get deliveries from FedEx, UPS, or a company called Golden State Overnight, which does have refrigerated trucks that service California.
I'm thinking insurance is a big issue with your company in places like Golden State.
Well, we haven't. We've been open for 2 years. We haven't broken a bottle or lost a bottle yet, so we're very proud of that.
Yeah, interesting stuff. I really appreciate you guys being on. Stephen, congratulations on the event. Big success. Jack, we're going to have you on more. We're going to come to one of your events, and we're going to take a tour on the radio of the facility. Thanks very much for being here, guys. It's interesting stuff.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And coming up next, it is going to be our gadget guru, Matt Dubois of EpicStyle.com. Are you living the wine lifestyle? You're going to find out in our next segment of Grape Encounters Radio.
Where fermented meets demented. Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson on GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
If there's any winemaking operation that I'm really proud to endorse and talk about on a regular basis, it's Sarlos & Sons in Los Olivos, California. You know, we did one of the very first broadcasts of Grape Encounters Radio from the Sarlos & Sons tasting room, and I'll tell you, it really set the tone for our show, because Sarlos & Sons really is everything that Grape Encounters Radio is all about. They do more than just make great wines. They pour their personality into every single bottle, and it's evident in every sip that you take. Sarlos & Sons wines are very special. These are very special people, and you simply won't go wrong by buying their wines. You can find their wines at sarlosandsons.com. That's S-A-A-R-L-O-O-S and sons.com. Or better yet, why not just pack your bags and head up to Los Olivos and check them out firsthand? It's Sarlos & Sons wines. It doesn't get any better than that.
You know, the world of Facebook is a lot like the world of Grape Encounters. Millions of people creating community and camaraderie through shared interests and connections. And honestly, who in their right mind doesn't love wine? That's why Grape Encounters Radio has created a group space for you to share your passion. If you're on Facebook and you have yet to join the Grape Encounters Radio group page, what are you waiting for? Thousands of your closest soon-to-be friends are there meeting others, having fun, sharing your own discoveries and experiences, and inspiring us with questions and ideas that help to make each new edition of Grape Encounters Radio Radio, the place to gather for a conversation among the wine-loving community. It's easy to join, and the price is right. It's free. All it takes is just a couple of moments of your time the next time you log into Facebook. Just enter Grape Encounters Radio into the search field, and there you are. And once you're our friend on Facebook, share the wealth. Let your family, friends, colleagues, and others who love wine know about your discovery, too. Many of the guests you enjoy hearing on Grape Encounters Radio made their way to the super secret broadcast location by way of our Facebook group page. Will you be next?
When there's good wine involved, they'll always come back for more. Grape Encounters continues on GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
And we're back with more Grape Encounters Radio. Time for our gadget guru, Matt Dubow of EpicStyle.com. Matt, I'm so glad to have you today because I wanted to continue a discussion that we had on the radio that did not include you recently.
That's rude.
Well, it wasn't on purpose, but it was just we were talking about this idea of people calling us wine drinkers, and I took some exception to that. It caused a lot of fuss. Did you see our Facebook page, how many people wrote in on that?
I did. There was quite a few.
Oh, I tell you what. People really got into this particular subject, but I never got a chance to address it with you.
Okay.
And I feel like no conversation is complete without getting the final stamp of approval or disapproval from you. Although you sometimes disagree with me a lot.
Well, we have different opinions on
that. I guess. It's okay. Anyway, Matt Dubow, Epic Style, coolest place to find every imaginable product for those of us who love wine and also spirits as well. But there's a whole thing that I don't think that we've really ever talked about, and it's this idea of wine lifestyle.
Right.
I mentioned it on a previous show.
Mm-hmm.
But what gives with that? I mean, it's so the idea that people build an entire lifestyle around wine. That's pretty unprecedented, I think.
Well, compared to other types of spirits, whether it's beer or vodka or gin, wine is in a different class altogether.
Yeah, but it's not even about other spirits. It's people have an absolute obsession with accessorizing in wine-themed things. In fact, I had somebody come to my house the other day, and I have some like Tuscan paintings on the wall, and they were talking about the fact that they're redoing their entire house in Tuscan, and they want everything to look like you know the wine regions of Tuscany,
right.
And everything has to have like grape leaves on it, and grapes and wine bottles, and there's no end to this stuff, and you are the greatest offender when it comes to.
I take offense to saying that we're an offender.
Well, offender's not necessarily a negative thing, but I mean, you're changing the world. You're making, seriously. I mean, people are gravitating to EpicStyle.com, and they're buying up all this stuff, and now everybody's house looks like a winery, which is not so bad. What's driving this?
Well, I think we've talked about this before. It's the romance of wine. And as you said before, you had friends who want to do their whole house in a Tuscan theme, or they want a whole, say, Provence theme. It's that French-Italian romance that has been around as long as I can ever remember. And I mean, I like my house to be that way, too.
It just makes you feel better.
It does. It's a vacation in your own home.
All right, let's first talk about this wine drinker thing.
Okay.
Okay, I don't know how you feel about it, but I just don't like the word drinker. And in fact, in the show that I talked about it, I pulled some dictionary definitions. And generally speaking, the word drinker is associated with overuse.
Okay.
That's wrong. I mean, if anything, somebody who drinks wine is gonna be somebody who really slows down consumption. The amount of alcohol in wine compared to anything else is, you know, basically nil. And you're supposed to drink it slowly. I mean, what would you call somebody that really appreciates wine?
To be honest with you, it doesn't offend me at all.
It doesn't.
I think you're way out of line, and I don't think that this is offensive to anybody. I think you're too sensitive, to be honest with you.
I've been told that.
If someone said, Matt, you're a wine drinker, I said, yeah, I enjoy wine. I don't take
offense.
Okay,
all right. Let me put it in context. What caused me to get on my high horse was somebody said to me, they said, you wine drinkers, like that.
Okay.
That's what bothered me. It was like you know, gutter snipes.
Again, I think you're being too sensitive. I would have been right back to him and I would have said, thank you.
You know what's really funny? I don't know if you know this, but the lion's share of people wrote in and they said if not to be called wine drinkers, they would prefer to be called winos.
So that's better then, right?
Well, one person actually spelled it W-I-N-E-A-U-X. Which I like that, and I think I'm really going to adopt that, I think. I like it.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about wine's lifestyle for a second then. People come to epicstyle.com because they can accessorize their house.
Right.
It's a great place for entertaining, right? Instead of just sticking a bottle of wine out there.
No, we have so many different items, and we're not the only company that has these type of items. We're probably the largest in the amount of housewares and decorative items and growing. But there's a lot of great companies out there that will have, say, tables made out of wine barrels that people put in their houses or outside. There's Lazy Susans made out of wine barrels. We have cork cages. We've talked about our banks before. There's companies that have wine grape leaf stencils that people can stencil, you know, little pretty designs.
Are you just going to keep carrying more and more of this stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Are you going to buy up those other companies someday?
Oh, we're going to design our own items.
So here's the thing I really wanted to talk to you about. I used to be involved with somebody who had these bears. Okay. And I think that they were called, if I'm not mistaken, Barrington Bears.
Okay.
And every single holiday, there was some new outfit and accessories that you would buy for the bear. They were very expensive, by the
right.
way. And you'd walk in the house and there would be the little bear display. There'd be the whole bear family.
Mm-hmm.
And people were so upset. I think they still are, by the way. I think they still have that Barrington Bear collection. But wine is kind of heading the same direction. People are dressing up their wine bottles.
Well, I think so. And we've kind of come out with quite a few different collections, and that goes in that same genre.
How many
genre.
Do you have? You have actually...
Oh, we have over 20 now.
That's what I was going to say, 20. So what are the most popular?
Oh, it goes all over the board, and it depends on the region. We have ones that are devoted to, say, sailing or the beach lifestyle. We have ones that have to do with wine girls and having fun and partying. It runs the gamut. And it's really funny because we notice that in different parts of the country, different themes really people gravitate
Give
to.
Give me a for instance.
Well, Florida. People really gravitate to the boating and the beach lifestyle. In the Midwest, you have people that are more the traditional, say when we do our holidays and the traditional Santas and reindeers.
And you have all the holidays covered. You have birthdays covered, weddings covered, anniversaries covered. Do we have wine stuff for football lovers?
We do. We have some koozies, actually. You can put your wine bottle in a koozie. But that really hasn't made that jump over.
Are you a football guy?
I definitely am.
So that's a tough leap for most football lovers to say football and wine, because beer really is the beverage of choice there, is it not?
A beer or a regular cocktail.
Are you weakening? I can't say that. Are you weakening them, however?
If people want to have a glass of wine, I will be more than happy to accommodate them. But I also like my cocktails myself. So.
All right. So let's talk about a collection. What would a collection include? I mean, what are the kinds of things that you can do to dress up your wine like you dress up your bear?
Well, I would say we have the cork cage collection, and we have different cork cages that run from wine bottles to wine glasses and barrels. And now we have ornaments and stoppers and napkin holders, and we're actually going to be increasing that. We have also candelabras that are in the same genre of the cork cage collections. And people will put this all over their house to get that kind of Tuscan Provence feel.
So if you for instance, look at one of the collections like the sailing collection,
uh-huh.
What's the range of products that you're going to find there?
Well, you will see, again, koozies. A lot of people have boats, and they'll obviously want some wine on their boat.
Yeah, so
they'll put the koozies. We have acrylic wine glasses, again, that would fit that boating collection. We have the stickums that we've previously talked about that have wine themes, coasters. wine coasters. So it kind of runs the gamut.
Yeah, I mean, some of these collections, you must have like 15, 20, even 30 different products that are in that particular theme.
Right.
Like shoes, right?
Shoes. It's that glamour girl collection.
What's the most popular collection?
To be honest with you, and I know you're going to laugh because you've laughed at this before.
All right, okay, go ahead.
Is the pet collection.
The pet collection.
People love
Why do
that.
People want to associate wine and pets? I don't get it. I'm not making fun of it. I just don't get it.
I think you are.
No, I'm not, Matt. Come on. It's just, I mean.
Do you have a dog?
I do.
Okay. Do you?
He drinks beer, though. That's the thing.
Okay.
All right.
But a lot of people love their pets, love wine, and want to kind of combine those two. And that's what we've done for them. And we've done koozies, we've done coasters, we've done stoppers. And they sell so well.
How would you feel about this? What if we got a psychologist in here, or a psychiatrist perhaps,
okay,
and we tried to understand better the mentality of why we want to associate wine with all of our favorite things?
That would be...
Or maybe you already know that. I'll bet your marketing research people know this. You're not going to tell me.
We can't let the secret out, of course.
But you don't just jump in and dive in and do this. There's a little research that goes behind this.
There's quite a bit of research, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of development hours to figure out what collections will work. And it's almost like fashion, and you have to predict some of these things as well.
And are you generally pleased with the response that you get from the public when you launch a collection?
Of course.
Is there anything that you ever did that you went, oh gosh, I'm never doing that again?
Yes.
You're
but
not going to
tell you.
Me. You know what? It's funny. It's like all the good stuff, Matt. You hold back. You know what I'm going to do? Next time we do this, I'm going to make sure you've had at least one or two bottles of wine, and then I'm going to squeeze it out of you. And you're going to tell me why.
I still won't budge.
Because you are the man. You're the genius behind all of this. Listen, if you want to get at least some insight into the mind of the gadget guru and his company, I mean, because they put things out there that I would have never dreamed of, but guess what? They do it. They're successful at it. The world is eating it up. No, the world's drinking it up. Okay, sorry. Epicstyle.com, Matt.com. You know what? You have made it to my hero list.
Oh, you're really kissing my
butt
now.
No, there's like three people in the world that I would be instead of me, and you're one of them.
What do you want?
That's it. All right. More Grape Encounters Radio coming your way. Thank you, Matt Dubow.
So what if this one's empty? We've got plenty more. Grape Encounters Radio on GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
David Wilson's been telling you for months now about the Vinair Wine Aerator. He swears by it as one of the must-have products for anyone who loves wine. Vinair incorporates art and style while expediting the process of aerating your favorite wine. The award-winning design gives each and every glass of wine enhanced flavors and superior bouquets. Simply pour your next glass of wine through the Vinair Wine Aerator. You'll hear the air gently aerating your wine in seconds, and you'll smell and taste the difference. Grape Encounters' David Wilson has tried various products, but has never found one that he likes as much as the Vinair. That's Vin-Aire. Other devices can leave a mess all over your counter. There's no drip with Vinair. It conveniently sits on top of the bottle when you're through using it. If you'd like to learn more about how aeration improves the flavor of a newly opened bottle of wine, visit GrapeEncountersRadio.com and click on the Vinair link. You're going to love this product.
Hi, it's David Wilson with Grape Encounters Radio. And you know, when I'm not up in wine country, my absolute favorite place, and I mean favorite place to go, is beautiful, enchanting Catalina Island. My goodness, if you haven't been to Catalina lately, you just don't know what you're missing. Catalina is a very wine-friendly island. All the restaurants have great wine lists. And Catalina even has its own vineyard now. Now, when I go to Catalina, I stay with Catalina Island Vacation Rentals. You can tour nearly 200 properties at CatalinaVacations.com. Catalina Island Vacation Rentals has everything you could want for every taste, from quaint cottages in Avalon to beautiful, stunning Hamilton Cove villas that even come with your own golf cart. You can make your reservation right online at CatalinaVacations.com. And really, the choices are nearly endless. Get away to Catalina Island today at CatalinaVacations.com.
Hmm. there's something funny about this wine. Grape Encounters continues with David Wilson on GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
My heart is drenched in wine.
And it's more Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson. You know, rumor has it that over there at St. Mark's Church, they're serving some pretty fine communion wine. It stands to reason, after all, because they've got some great winemakers in the area that are involved in that church. So I imagine the competition is very fierce for whose wines will be served during Sunday services. You know, it really made me think about this whole subject of communion wine, and I wanted to do a piece not only on communion wine, but also Passover wines. But for today, I wanted to dig into the communion wine subject, especially after I came across a story that was released just a month or two ago regarding the 2011 Guide to Good Communion Wine. Now, this was published earlier this year at St. Paul's Cathedral in London. The guide, which is known simply to aficionados as the Bible, lists the very best locations for communion wine the length and breadth of England, and it includes, believe it or not, tasting notes and awards the coveted golden chalice to the parish which is judged to have served the best communion wine of the year. What many people don't realize, says guide editor Reverend Henry Newcomb, is how many churches now boast their very own micro wineries. No kidding, they make their own wines, and competition between these parishes can be very fierce. A favorable review in this guide can actually make a significant difference when the collection plate is passed around. Think about that. They're actually considering how good communion wine is in an effort to collect more money from the people who attend services there. Absolutely amazing. Now, the guide is famed for its flowing praise and occasional brutal honesty. For instance, the entry for St. Winfrid's Buckley notes, is truly appalling wine, which is sadly matched by the quality of the rather dull service. Adding, if the merciful Lord were walking amongst us today, this is the wine that he would be turning back into water. Oh, I've got to control myself. He would turn the wine back into water. Anyway, the winning parish for 2011 is the sleepy Yorkshire market town of Clipton. Visitors to the 14th century church there dedicated to St. Barnabas are treated to a different wine depending upon the time of service. The guide describes their 8 o'clock a.m. communion wine as a good session wine and well worth getting up for. But the most passionate praise is reserved for the wine that they serve during the 11 a.m. service. Quote, a fiery blessing with contrasting hints of brimstone, damnation, and eventual forgiveness that will bring you to your knees in thanksgiving. It reaches deep into the soul and refreshes the parts other religious tinctures cannot reach. Hallelujah! Wow, interesting. The guide's winning entry also concludes with praise for the hemp communion wafers, which have been baked by St. Barnabas for the last 25 years. The perfect accompaniment, they say, which leaves you on a spiritual high for the rest of the day. You've got to get those hemp biscuits. Now, meanwhile, here in the States, there's a lot of controversy about serving grape juice versus real wine. And I found this paper that was published by Spokane Reverend Brian Abshire of the Highlands Reformed Presbyterian Church in Washington. He offers some insight into communion wine and, yes, indeed, takes some great exception to the substitution of grape juice for the real deal. He says wine is a blessing that God specifically promises to those who honor him with the tithe. Honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce, so your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. What were we saying earlier, that you serve good wine in church and people will tithe more, they'll put more in the collection plate? You know, it's it all makes sense to me now. Now, he goes on to say that some people have argued that the wine in Scripture was unfermented grape juice, but he says this is both linguistically and contextually untenable. Grape juice rapidly ferments into wine. It is the fermenting process that bursts old wineskins, and it's the alcohol, get this, in wine that, when used lawfully, now that's an important thing to note, lifts broken spirits and makes the sad glad. And I absolutely believe that. Amen to you, Brian Abshire, Reverend of Highlands Reformed Presbyterian Church. You know, one last point that he makes, he says that thus for churches to use grape juice instead of wine is to destroy the imagery of the Holy Spirit in communion. Yes, some people refrain from any alcohol because they're concerned about drunkenness, but for a church to refuse to drink wine at communion is to implicitly reject the very image God has given us of the work of the Holy Spirit. Some people wonder if this is really necessary. And he concludes, does it really matter if we use grape juice as a symbol of real wine? Well, if it's only a symbol, he says, then why not use peanut butter and jelly? Oh, this is some very good stuff. I could go on, but I won't. So where do the communion wines come from anyway? Well, here in America, there are a couple of big standouts. The first is from a name that you may know. They come from Fresno, California, up there, central part of the state. And they are altar wines from Cribari. Seems I remember a jingle for Cribari. Anyway, since 1917, the Cribari family has been recognized as a leader in providing sacramental wine to the reverend clergy. They say, quote, our fine reputation has been earned through the quality of our altar wine, quality born of care and meticulous attention to detail. They say that their altar wine has enjoyed continuous ecclesiastical approbation by the bishops of Fresno, California. That just seems to sound strange when you say it, bishops of Fresno, California. But anyway, all sacramental wine is prepared in full accordance with canon law. Now, what does that mean when we say prepared in accordance with canon law? Well, altar wine or wine appropriate for use during communion has been defined in many ways over the centuries, but it's subject to certain criteria. The wine must be natural, must be from grapes, and it must not be corrupt. That's kind of interesting. This means that the wine must be naturally fermented with nothing added to it, and the wine itself cannot be soured or become vinegar. Boy, thank goodness for that. Now, another major producer of communion wine, and we all know this name, is Napa Valley's renowned Christian Brothers. Now, Brother Timothy of Christian Brothers Winery was also instrumental, you may know, in establishing the modern wine industry in Napa. Very interesting stuff. A lot of the wine industry originated from the churches. Now, after an earlier career as a teacher, Brother Timothy transferred to the order's Mount LaSalle location on Mount Veeder, northwest of Napa. This is in 1935, to become the wine chemist for the order's expanding wine operations. Christian Brothers has grown grapes and made sacramental wine in Benicia, California during Prohibition. However, the dire effects of the Great Depression reached Mount LaSalle in 1936, and the place went bankrupt. Now, these winemakers were able to weather the stormy years, and Christian Brothers decided to branch out into commercial production. A very good decision on their part. They made wine and brandy. Everybody's seen Christian Brothers brandy. Well, this occurred after the repeal of Prohibition, of course. And this science teacher was a very fast learner, soon establishing Christian Brothers as one of the leading brands in the state's budding wine industry. Now, we're not talking about just leading brand maker of communion wine, but wine in general. Brother Timothy's smiling face in advertisements and promotional materials became one of the most familiar images for wine consumers across the country. Business actually boomed in the 40s and 50s, made it possible for De La Salle Institute to remove its bankruptcy status. The winery operations were expanded, and the property was expanded to 500 acres. In 1957, the vineyard and winery operations were incorporated as Mount LaSalle. In 1988, the LaSalle Vineyards began negotiations for the sale of the winery operations, including the label and vineyards, and the sale was eventually made to Hublein, the spirits company. Turns out that four former Christian Brothers winery executives ended up purchasing the Mount LaSalle Altar wine brand, which continues to be a major supplier of communion wines today. This, of course, is just a very brief look at communion wine. Very interesting stuff. Remember, Grape Encounters Radio is brought to you by EpicStyle.com. Join us next week for another edition of Grape Encounters, and just visit us at GrapeEncounters.com.
Join us next week for more Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson here on GrapeEncountersRadio.com. If you don't, we'll be crushed.